Good morning, KCSB. This is Louis D'Angelo, your new host of Poodle Radio, the Santa Barbara Independence radio show on KCSB. Today we got some very interesting guests for you today, opening up with Valerie and Martha and one other who is not here yet, and I'm not quite sure of her name, but we'll be talking about the Santa Barbara Search and Rescue Team, what they do, how they save us from the wilderness, and many other things. And while I'm getting them set up, I'm going to play you a track by Ray LaMontagne, and they are playing Santa Barbara Bowl, September 11th. Make sure to check them out. They are very good. This is God Willing and the Creek Don't Rise. Okay, so I would like to introduce my guests, and I would like to start with Valerie. Hello, Valerie.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. Would you like to introduce everyone else with you?
Certainly. I'm Valerie Walston with Santa Barbara County Search and Rescue. With me is Nelson Trichler, our PIO, our Public Information Officer, and Martha Sadler, the Opinions Editor at The Independent.
Hello.
Hi. Good morning. So, everyone out there would like to know why you're here. And I could tell them, but you probably would do a lot better job than I would. Would you like to start with?
Well, we're here to talk with these guys about what Search and Rescue does and whether listeners out there could do it too, and about some of their adventures. As people may or may not know, Search and Rescue are the people that come find you in the wilderness and save you if you've gotten lost or if you've driven off a cliff or gotten caught up in a tree hang gliding or any number of other things. They're a highly trained elite squad of the Santa Barbara Sheriff's Department. They're like the SWAT team of the wilderness. They're on call 24/7, and they're all volunteer. which is pretty amazing.
That is pretty amazing. It's good to know, too, because I'm planning on going to Seven Falls today, so I might need some help.
So we might be seeing you later.
Yeah, okay. That's a good chance.
Bring water.
Okay.
I met Valerie because I got lost. I took a hike in the afternoon on Blue Canyon Trail, and I never got back at the next morning. By the next morning, my friends called 911 and search and rescue came to find me. You can read all about my misadventure in this week's Independent, along with Valerie's actually much more interesting story about how she joined the team. Valerie, who describes herself as a city girl, quote, "I watched during the first month as my fake French manicure was replaced by blisters and bloody nail beds. The following months transformed me from a borderline prima donna to a hardcore adrenaline junkie and certifiable tomboy."
And it's true.
You just graduated from the Academy. Do you want to talk about that?
I did. About 2 months ago, I graduated from the Academy. Started the Academy in January, about 5 months, and we learned everything from rope rescue to knots and anchors to get those rope rescues, navigation, patient packaging to get the victim in the Stokes basket, tie him up, get him back to the vehicle safely. I can talk a little bit about how I got into the Academy. I assume that's probably part of the story. About a little over a year ago, I went out for a hike on Rattlesnake Canyon, and just a simple out and back destination, and got pretty lost. Not lost, just stranded. I knew exactly where I was, but had a beautiful view of the ocean, which is the upside of pretty much any trail in Santa Barbara. But got extremely stranded, and I'm a good hiker like you, Martha, and it was just one of those things that you take a couple missteps and suddenly you find yourself in a bad situation. So talked to search and rescue. They deployed a team. I think actually they deployed several teams. Worked with County Fire and the U.S. Forest Service, and got escorted back safely. And had some red face over it because you know your stuff, but you all of a sudden you go back to the trailhead and you have an entire squad of people making sure you're okay, and you feel like, well, I was just out on a hike. How did
well,
this
you
happen?
Were rock climbing or something, weren't you?
I didn't mean to be rock climbing, but I got see. To a point in the little deer trail I was on that I couldn't turn back, so I had to scale the wall. So I did that, and then I really couldn't scale the wall back down, so I just kept ascending higher and higher. Ultimately, looked for a place where I knew I could be seen.
And the Academy training, do a lot of people drop out?
A couple people will drop out. And a couple people might not make it through. It's a really, really rough academy. You go through a background with the sheriff's department. They interview everybody you've ever met, family, friends, employers, neighbors you've never even met. It's grueling, but it is so completely worth it to get through that academy, to be a part of that team. So Saturdays and a lot of Wednesday nights were dedicated to the academy. We would go out, we would stay in, we would do some book work.
Were there very many other women?
There was one other woman in my academy, and she ended up leaving, so I was the only graduating member of my academy.
Wow. How many women are in the search and rescue team?
Oh, we have about five at the moment, and it's as high as maybe 8 or 10, and we try to keep it as most as we can. We encourage women to come out to participate in the team. But historically, it's been about maybe 10-15% of the overall membership.
And there are like about 35 members?
That's correct.
And you're on call. This is so amazing. You're on call 24/7. Every single member of the team is on call 24/7, 365 days a year.
That's so correct.
That is unbelievable. So if you're partying...
Well, that's one of the reasons we have 35 members, and we're actually looking to increase that number to somewhere between 40 and 50 members so that when a call comes out at any time during the day or night, we have enough initial members to take care of the situation. Typically, you might have somewhere between 8 to 12 members initially respond off the page. And as time goes on, those people that can free up their time either from personal situations or work will respond as needed.
Wow. Can you tell a little bit about search methods? You were talking about fast track teams and different sorts of teams within the.
That's correct. When we get called for a search, someone's missing. The primary thing we need to do is to find their last known location, whether that's a trailhead or maybe a campsite or someone physically saw them on the trail. Once we identify that that person is in that area, then we'll send out what we call our hasty teams. And these are well-equipped teams that are trained to go light and to search the trails for clues. Not necessary for the person themselves, although that's the end objective to find, but we try to find clues. We have a method we call sign cutting. So we'll look for their tracks. We'll look for signs that they went through certain areas, whether it's broken branches, maybe scuffed dirt. These are all things that we're trained to look for. And then as part of that search management, the people back managing the search will then start to try to contain that area. Try to put trail blocks in areas, because what we don't want to do is have that person go what we call into the rest of the world. The longer the search goes, the greater the area exponentially we could be looking at. So we want to try to contain that as fast as possible, get hasty teams in, see if we can do a quick find of that person. And if that doesn't work, then we will expand that, bring in additional teams, maybe bring in dog teams, bring in a helicopter to try to search, put in trackers on the ground. So all these things are just part of the overall search management once someone goes missing.
Wow. Can people, you told me once that you try to discourage, you spend a lot of time discouraging people from joining the Academy because it's...
As part as our so recruitment process, we'll have kind of open forums for people to come to learn about the team. Uh-huh. We'll do a little PowerPoint presentation, and then we'll talk about the team. And we want to make sure that people understand that the time commitment that's involved, this really is a second job. People need to know that it requires physical fitness. They need to know that it requires a certain amount of equipment purchases on their part.
Wow.
So this is just not something you do on a whim because you kind of want to go out there and have fun. You know, so during the recruitment process, we really try to make people aware of the requirements. And sometimes that discourages them from continuing on. But we'd rather have them decide not to continue on at the beginning than 6 months down the road in the academy.
Dang. So, Valerie, what has been your most exciting adventure so far?
Probably
finding me.
Well, probably the one of my rescue.
Yeah.
We've had a couple good calls. Mutual aid response, working with fire and AMR will also go.
AMR?
American Medical Response, the ambulance company, the medics will go on a lot of these calls. We've had a good one.
In the wilderness?
Out to the trailhead, out in the backcountry, maybe,
yeah.
Something like that. We had one hiker who, you know, you just feel it's these people who are good hikers, and you feel bad for them because they just, you know, they know what they're doing,
you
and they just
so
get
sweet.
Lost. Oh, well, thank you.
They don't shame you. That doesn't mean you should just call them on a whim.
Well, this guy it was his birthday, and he wanted to go out into the backcountry and do just a little overnight, and didn't take a sleeping bag, but had a two-person tent, so he might have been a little over-equipped in some places. and he went for a day hike out to Mono Campground, and just one of those things, just got a little disoriented, found the river, went the wrong way on the river. River runs east and west, and there's nothing back out there to orient you if you don't have a map or a compass or a GPS device. You know you're going east and west, but those are two very different things.
And east and west, you don't know where it leads to.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And he was actually helicoptered out, too.
He was.
Okay, well, we're going to take a really quick break here and check out this song by Bright Eyes, who is playing Santa Barbara Bowl September 25th and their new CD, The People's Key. This is Shell Games off of that CD. We'll be back in about 4 minutes, and maybe Valerie will tell us her story.
But here come that heavy love, I'm never gonna move it alone. Here come that heavy love, tag it on a tenement wall. Here come that heavy love, someone gotta share in the load. Oh, here come that heavy love, I'm never gonna move it alone.
Again, that was Bright Eyes. They were going to be playing at the Santa Barbara Bowl on the 25th, and I'll be there, so you'll see me. And we're coming back now. Hopefully, we can hear Valerie's story about how she got lost in the wilderness.
Well, when we left, we were talking about the hiker who was ill-prepared, but kind of over-prepared, had some of the stuff, but had most of the things that he needed for overnight. And we ended up just taking him out on helicopter, bringing him back to the saddle at Cold Spring, used that as a landing zone, and gave him a ride home. So it was really full service. I've been on 14 calls, but Nelson, however, has been on a lot more than I have. So if you want to get some good stories, you're probably going to get them out of him.
I'd be willing to hear more than one good story.
And Nelson, as I was talking about during the break, is Nelson is known on the team as the guy who has everything you could possibly want. You know, you want water. Well, do you want filtered? Do you want sparkling? Do you want
grapefruit?
Yeah.
Well, as I said, there's been too many times where I've been caught without it over the number of years. So I've been burned. And I learned by my mistakes. So I try to bring what I can. There's been several operations that stands out in my mind from a search standpoint. I remember it's probably about 25 years ago. There was an individual lost, about an 84-year-old man, hunter, was hunting with his sons, and he stayed back at the camp to wash the dishes. His son went out to go hunting, and he followed about 20 minutes later. But when they got to a trail junction, the sons went right, and when he got to it, he went left. And that was the last time he was known. He'd been missing for about 4 days when we got the call. This is in Northern California, and as part of our organization, we respond to mutual aid calls throughout California. In this particular instance, there was a call for a lot of resources because They had a lot of searches up in Northern California, and they were basically running low on personnel. So at that time, the call went out, and all the search and rescue teams in Southern California, part of the Mountain Rescue Association, got together, and we actually, I think there was about 70 of us that were loaded up into a C-137 in Van Nuys Airport, and we flew up to Shasta, all of us, and then we deplaned, and we drove probably about 8 hours back into the wilderness to the base camp. Spent the night, the next day we're deployed, and my team was going down this drainage ditch, and we actually came across some footprints, and so we were following those for a while, and then we were going up this one drainage, and we heard a whistle. And at first we thought it was a whistle from another search and rescue team. But once we confirmed that it wasn't, we started to go towards the whistle, and it was actually this individual, this hunter, that had been missing at that point now up to 5 days, living off some berries and some water. And he was actually stuck on a ledge. He couldn't go up or couldn't go down.
Wow.
And so we were able to climb up to him, and then we rigged a harness, and we were able to lower him down to a point where then we hiked him back out a couple miles up this drainage and out.
Wow.
So that was pretty exciting for us to do as a team effort, combining with other search and rescue teams throughout the Southern California area to go up there to deploy and to actually locate this individual who had been missing at that time, you know, over 4 days.
That's exciting.
It's very exciting. Is that the farthest you guys have ever gone?
We've actually gone on a search in Colorado.
Wow.
Yeah, I was not on that deployment, but we've gone to many parts of California, Sierra Nevadas, Yosemite, San Gregorio Mountains, San Jacinto Mountains on searches, especially during the winter. We are accredited mountain rescue team, so we do respond in snow and ice conditions. We do train. We do have the equipment. There's many times, especially about 5 years ago, there seemed to be a string of missing people on San Gregorio Mountain. At one time, I think there was like 5 people missing, and we responded several times down there to help their search effort to find these people.
Wow.
Are there a lot more searches recently than there have been historically?
It has been going up, and one of the primary reasons is, I think, is cell phones. If you look back at our calls, I could relate phones directly or indirectly to that call probably 75-80% of the time. So 15 years ago, when people really didn't have cell phones, either they didn't go out because they didn't think they had that safety net with them, or when they did get out and get lost or hurt, they self-rescued themselves. So that has been a change over the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah. Is that a problem?
Well, it's a problem for them that people go out there. For us, it just makes us more active. We run about 140 calls a year. Some of those calls get resolved within 10, 15 minutes. Some of those go overnight into you know, 1 or 2 days, depending on the search mechanisms. So we are busier. We do cover the entire county, so whether you're lost in the foothills of Santa Barbara or back in Cuyama or Lompoc, we do respond to those calls. So that keeps us busy throughout the year.
And this is all stuff we signed up for, too. This is stuff we enjoy doing. So if we get a call, you're not being a burden to us. We actually are kind
That's
of in, we've been looking forward to it
all the time.
We are volunteers. We're doing this because we want to. We're not getting paid for it. We don't have to do it. You know, if it's not your time to respond for personal reasons or you have a business engagement, that's why we have the multiple numbers of the team, is so that they can respond and then you can show up when you can. But it is volunteer, and we do it because we love to do it.
That is beautiful. And you run a business.
I do.
A financial business?
It's a financial planning business. I've been a financial planner for the last 30 years. So I'm flexible enough, and I have understanding clients that if something comes up, they allow me to go out and do this for the community.
And you are an editor and a writer, obviously a writer.
I'm a writer. I write for a website called livingsocial.com. And I have 2 editors in Washington, D.C. that I've never even met. So I have a 24-hour deadline. They give me work. They don't care if I turn it around within 5 minutes or 24 hours from them. So if we get a call, I'm a mile. I work out of home, and I'm a mile from the station. So if we get a call, I just drop my computer and head out to the station.
Do you go out in the wilderness for pleasure still?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I take a lot more stuff with me. I definitely feel a lot better about going out, and I know who to call now.
Yeah.
And I think the majority of the members, that's one of the reasons why they're on the team, because they love to be in the outdoor. They love to do wilderness activities, whether it's hiking, rock climbing, whitewater rafting, mountain biking. These people love to be outdoors. So calling them to come out to help is in an environment, I mean, personally me, it gets me away from my computer and my desk, so I enjoy that. But also, too, they realize that they could be in that situation themselves,
yeah,
as Valerie experienced herself. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the reasons why they want to go out there and want to help people, because they could find themselves in the same situation.
And I find myself kind of exploring a lot more trails, too. I find, you know, I know that we'll get calls out to Naira, so I want to go explore some of the Naira trails. I know that we get some of the calls at the Upper Oso. I want to go explore some of those. So it actually encourages me to get out even more.
And one other benefit from the team, and I didn't realize until I got on the team, is that because of the environment we are put in, because of situations, because of the desire to learn more about where we are in the county and the trails, we see things in the backcountry that maybe probably less than 2% of the people ever get to see.
Ooh.
So that's an incredible incentive for people to go out there and be on the team to see things that they would not normally see out in the backcountry.
And because you now have 35 new friends, these are people who you all have something in common with. We all love being outdoors. We all love hiking. So I have 35 new hiking buddies.
Wow, forever BFF.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I have a question when we get back, but until then, this is going to be the Soft Pack. They're playing in Velvet Jones on September 8th, and I love that venue, and I would see anyone there. This is Answer to Yourself off their newest. Again, that was the soft pack. Check them out at Velvet Jones on September 8th. And my question for you guys, really quick though, I want to introduce my co-host, Levi Michaels.
Good morning, good morning.
Hopefully he can chime in, have another good question or two.
I got some questions.
Okay, good. My question is, are you guys all helicopter trained?
We are over time. I am not, because I just joined full time.
Yeah, we have an extensive helicopter training program. The Sheriff Department has 4 helicopters, 2 light helicopters, and 2 heavy lift multi-person transport. In addition, the county fire has a couple heavy lift Huey helicopters, and we also use helicopters from other agencies, whether it's Ventura, a Sheriff Department, or the Coast Guard, or even the National Guard at times. So we have to be very versed in safety and working around helicopters.
So I would join just to learn how to fly a helicopter.
Well, we don't fly, but we generally just get dropped off.
Oh.
But I can get you the keys.
Okay, that works.
Okay.
Let me ask you, my question is sort of more pop culture related, but are any of you familiar with the popular survival reality shows, Survivor Man, Man vs. Wild, perhaps?
Not my forte, but I'd like to join.
No one here is familiar with these shows. I think
I've heard some of these shows, and they look really interesting. And the one, what's the one with like the man and the woman, and they're in a relationship. They go out and try to survive, and then they decide that they can't stand each other because 5 days alone in the wilderness will make anybody can't stand you.
That sounds really entertaining. I'm not familiar with that one in particular, but I am wondering if any of these shows have any sort of grounding in reality as they claim to be.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I haven't seen them, so I cannot comment.
I watched Survivor about 10 years ago. That was the last time I saw that show. It's a good show.
I think the other thing that is, this is Santa Barbara, so there's not, I don't know, I feel like that show's a little more wild sometimes, you know?
Than Santa Barbara can get. Yeah. Santa Barbara can get kind of wild.
That's true, it can.
Out in the backcountry and then past that, the San Rafael Wilderness, it can get pretty gnarly. And you have zero cell phone coverage out there. We have a hard time getting any coverage on our satellite phones. So that plus the elements plus bears and mountain lions.
Are there actually bears?
Mm-hmm. There are.
There are bears.
Yeah, mountain lions.
Well, now I know.
Generally, though, if they know you're there, they're going to avoid you. So if you make a lot, if you make a lot of noise, and if you don't get between their the mothers and their cubs, you'll be fine. Again, they just don't want to be anywhere near you. Yeah, so the problem is if you surprise them, and if they are in a defensive position, then they will attack you just out of defending themselves. So the key is to be aware of your situation, have what we call situational awareness, and not put yourself in that position.
You guys are talking about some of the trainings you have coming up.
We have a swift water rescue
wild
training. Yeah, they're fun. We have them about once a month. They're usually overnight. We have one coming up in next weekend. We're going out to the Kern River out on Lake Isabella to do some swift water training, and that is actually a training led by Nelson, so he can probably talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, during the course of a normal year, we might have 3 or 4 swift water related rescues, and so it's very important for us to have people train for their own safety so that they know what to do to keep themselves safe, but also to help rescue other people. I was involved with one rescue on the San Ynez River a number of years ago where a couple people got some inner tubes and decided just to float down the river.
Yeah.
So they left after the first crossing at on Paradise Road, and probably within 1,000 feet, they both lost their inner tubes, and one got stranded on the other side of the shore, and one got stranded right in the middle of a fast-moving water. So we called, and actually my partner and I, we were the first on scene, and when we came on scene, some bystanders had thrown them a rope, and this subject had tied the rope around himself, and the bystanders had then tied the rope around a tree, thinking that, you know, well, if he slipped off where he was, a little perch, then the, you know, at least he wouldn't go down any further. The problem is with moving water, it's relentless. It doesn't give up. And if you're tied on a fixed line, you'll go underwater and drown. So we immediately untied the rope from the tree, but we still had to get out to him. So we on our training, we swam out to the individual and was able to get him, and then swam back to the side of the wow. the river and the banks. So, and he was fine, very cold and very cold water. But it just kind of tells you that, you know, some people go out there for enjoyment and they're having fun, and the next minute they're in a life threatening situation.
How can people join the academy? What do they? When does the next one start? And who do they call?
We generally run academy at least once a year. And our next academy will probably start, I think, sometime in October or November. That hasn't been settled yet. The best way to get our information about the team and how to join the team, though, is to go to our website. And that's www.sbcsar.org, or Santa Barbara County Search and Rescue. That's our initials of our website. Or just Google Santa Barbara County Search and Rescue, and you'll find us.
You were talking about a training that sounded a little bit like waterboarding.
It's not torture. It is a volunteer. We love to do it. Let's see. It was in June. It was our HEED training, a helicopter emergency egress device. And that's, as Nelson was saying during the break, we are helicopter trained. We'll fly out to the island if there's an incident out there. Helicopters aren't fail safe. They can go down too. They're ours. In the event if it did go down, we want to be prepared for how to get out of that device safely. And Nelson, do you want to talk a little bit about the training?
Well, we are responsible for search and rescue out at the islands, the Santa Barbara islands. And so there's been many occasions where we've had to fly over to perform rescues or searches. It is a big expanse of water. And so if you're in a helicopter and flying out and there's a mechanical problem and it goes down into the ocean, just the way the helicopter is configured and the weight and the mechanics of the rotor system, almost instantaneously that helicopter will flip upside down as soon as it hits the water, and it will start to sink. And so those on board need to be able to egress out of that helicopter quickly and safely. So we train beforehand to know what to do in case that happens. And hopefully we'll never have to put that training into place, but we do go through it.
But you guys are so wonderful. Oh. And everybody loves search and rescue. It's like firefighters. Nobody doesn't love a firefighter. Nobody doesn't love search and rescue.
Especially when you're lost.
I can't believe the work that you're doing. You're so athletic and elite.
Yeah, but there's been good. I mean, those are good instances. There are also times where, unfortunately, we have to deal with situations that do not have a positive outcome. Someone might go out in the elements and overextend themselves and suffer a heat stroke. And die. And we've had various incidents where mountain bikers or hikers have gone out and have not been well hydrated, have not been physically fit, and they overextend themselves, and their body cannot keep pace, and they die of exposure or heat-related injuries. And that's a sad thing. And, dealing with family members and trying to help them start the grieving process, it's a very difficult thing. So it's that's tough not only on the family members, but of the team members who are out there who might have spent a lot of time trying to find this person. So we try to watch that. We try to have debriefing sessions afterwards in order to help our members get through that process also. But that is one of the downsides of being on the team is being exposed to those type of situations.
So if I do go out in the wilderness, how do I be safe? How do I avoid that kind of situation?
Good question. First of all, I would encourage you to read The Independent this week, because there's a lot of good suggestions in that. You can also go to our website. That's sbcsar.org, and that has hiking tips on there too. One of the first things that you should do, though, is tell someone where you're going, what your plan route is, when you're going, when you expect to be back, and what to do if you're not back. And generally that means call 911 and to get us going as fast as possible, because the sooner we can get called, the sooner we can get in and minimize that potential area that we're looking for. So that's one thing. Second thing is take a buddy. Don't hike alone. I'm guilty of this a lot, but nonetheless, having someone there as a buddy is critical, especially if you get hurt. Know where you're going. Be familiar with the area. If you're not, take a map. Take a compass. GPS works great, but make sure you have extra batteries because GPS units eat up batteries. Cell phones, we mentioned that earlier, are a wonderful tool. And you know,
in the front country.
Yeah, you know, I carry one with me all the time, but there are limitations. There's limited cell sites for access in the backcountry. So pretty much anything in the San Fernando wilderness is not covered by cell towers. And when you're out of the general normal cell area, it goes into search mode to try to find a cell tower, and that eats up your batteries a lot. So if you're in that backcountry with a cell phone and you don't have any service, turn off the phone to try to save your batteries. Take food and water. Okay. Normally we suggest, especially in the summer, that you take a liter of water for every hour you're going to be out there exerting yourself. Take some food, some snacks, something that has salt in it, some quick energy. Right, wear the right clothing, whether you're in winter or summer. You know, do the layering system. Have some type of wicking clothing on you so that you can get that moisture away from your body.
And be prepared for climate change too, because if you go out, you start out in the front country, it could be 70 degrees out here. Once you get to the top of the peak, one of the peaks, it could be 30 degrees up there with snow,
or
vice versa.
Or night comes and the fog rolls in. And it can be very wet and cold at that point in time. So those are just a few tips that people might want to think about. And again, if they want to go to our website, there's a much more extensive list of equipment to bring.
Sounds good. Well, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you
and
very
I
much.
And I have learned a lot, and I plan
Thank
on
you.
Actually bringing some things with me when I go hiking.
Very All right. Bring water.
Okay. And once again, you can check that out more. Was it
SBCSAR, okay. Or just Google Santa Barbara County Search and Rescue.
That works, too.
That works.
All right.
And we'll see you out there.
Thank you very much. Now we got Alberta Cross with I've Known for Long. They are playing, I believe, every Friday in the next couple of weeks at Velvet Jones. So check them out. Okay, and we are joined now on Poodle Radio, KCSB. Whoa!
Oh, look at that.
That was crazy. Well, anyway, we're back, and we're here with Ben.
And here I am.
We are going to talk about schools and the community and what we can do to help.
Absolutely.
And I read your article, and one thing jumped out to me. You said it takes a village to raise a child, and I find that to be insightful, very interesting, and I feel like it kind of played off a lot of what you had to say. So would you like to talk about it?
Yeah, so I work with an organization called Partners in Education, which is a nonprofit program run by our local county education office. And what we do is we connect individuals with into activities in our local schools. So teachers submit requests for specific needs that they have. So they might want someone to come in and talk about nanotechnologies in their classroom. So we might, if we don't have someone on our list who does that, we'll go out and find someone, maybe a UCSB graduate student, to come into the classroom. We'll prep that person how to talk to ninth graders. We'll fingerprint and live scan, screen them. We'll coordinate everything to get those people into the classroom and connecting right with kids. And really, we all have a stake in raising, and supporting our kids, our local families, and our schools. And what we've tried to do through our program is really create a hub through which people can get involved. And since launching our volunteer program 3 years ago through Partners in Education, we've recruited 3,800 volunteers. We've placed 2,800 into actual service for a total of more than 30,000 hours served. And, it's really the human and organizational capital of our community coming in, and I think it represents a true groundswell of support for our local schools at a time when it's desperately needed, and there are significant challenges that we face in our schools, but also in the broader community. So I really appreciate you guys, Levi and Lewis, having us on, and the Independent for a great article in the paper today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, we keep it local.
That's right, baby.
Well, thanks to you, man. That sounds like a very beneficial project for a lot of people. But for volunteers, do people just come to you and say, I know how to do this, this is my area of expertise?
Well, we have a little bit of that, but really where it starts for us is with teacher requests. So there are about 30 different kinds of activities that people get involved in, and people will let us know what they're interested in of those 30 activities, again, that teachers request. So, if someone signs up to work in a school garden, which we get a lot of requests from schools for school gardening, we won't ask them to come and do mock interviews, for example, which is another opportunity that we have. So we maintain a pretty intricate database where we track people, where they want to serve, when they're available, what activities they want to get involved in. And so we're really efficiently, and we're not harassing people and driving them crazy with all these requests. We get hundreds of requests every year from teachers. We place more than 1,000 guest speakers. We do mock interviews with every senior in high school now, ongoing tutoring opportunities, library assistance, special events. We've had UCSB fraternities and sororities adopting schools and getting involved with special populations. There's just a litany of things that folks can do, but again, it's really driven by what the specific need is in the school. And schools don't have the ability to really communicate most effectively out to the community, because really what we need our schools and our teachers doing is teaching kids. They don't have the time to run a grassroots community organizing effort. I come from a background in politics, actually locally here in Santa Barbara, having run campaigns in my past, and getting into public education in 2005, I really saw how there's a disconnect between our schools and our broader community. And our goal with this program is to build a bridge between the two, between our school system and those organizations that are serving students and families and the broader community. And what we found is when you ask people to help and you give them a really effective way of getting involved, where their time is used wisely and efficiently and most for the most impact, they really will stand up and help out. And it's been tremendous. We just can't be more thankful for that support.
And in the schools that you deal with, does it go range all the way from K through 12, or is it going even further than that? Like, if I go to class, here at UCSB, am I going to have a guest lecturer who's a community member?
No, we focus on the K-12 system. Okay. So it's from Carpinteria to Goleta. So the South Santa Barbara County schools that we're serving. We get a lot of, like I said, we get a lot of UCSB students who are volunteers and who are maybe building their pre-professional hours because they're studying to become teachers or they're getting licensure as therapists or interested in a particular career area, or lots of students just want to help out and get involved. And, you know, a lot of students at UCSB, I've spent a lot of time in IV and UCSB, and I know it's a community of itself, but it's interesting to really to work with UCSB students who for the first time are learning about other populations in the surrounding community as well, and how powerful they can be in the life of a child and really affecting kids who really need that help, that one-on-one individualized help.
I attended the Isla Vista Carnival at elementary past 2 years in a row, but that's really the only involvement I've been, unfortunately. Well, but I'd love to get more involved. How would I go about doing that?
Well, our webpage, people can sign up and fill out a short survey as to what their interests are on our website, which is santabarbarapartners.org. Again, that's santabarbarapartners.org. And you can sign up online there, giving us your information. We also have listed all the specific requests that we currently have from schools. So you can search, kind of like a Google keyword search, as to the school you want to serve in or the community you're in. You know, if you want to take a lunch break and you want to just serve in your neighborhood school right by your business, we can place you into an activity that really suits who you are, what your passions are, and where you are in your life. So folks, again, it's santabarbarapartners.org. You can also email me directly at benromo@sbceo.org.
And that Isla Vista Carnival was part of your organization's efforts?
I don't know if actually, I'm not sure if that was one of the special events that we plug people into. I wouldn't be surprised. One of the programs that we actually run and link up with significantly is our AmeriCorps literacy tutoring program. Mm-hmm. And I know that our AmeriCorps members, who are also volunteer recruiters with our program, were involved in that event. I don't know if it was something that the school actually asked us for help with in organizing that event, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised.
That's very cool.
Oh yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a fun one. Well, thank you very much for coming in and talking to us. Unfortunately, though, it's already almost 8 or 9 o'clock now, so going
to
be moving on.
Drive time is coming to an end, and yes. I really appreciate you guys having
absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. We're very glad to have you.
Yeah,
thanks for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this has been Poodle Radio. This has been, we've had the Santa Barbara Search and Rescue on, and now we've had Ben from Santa Barbara Partners helping out schools, and we do our best here. And now we're going to play some Purity Ring with Lofty Cries.
Thanks, guys.
I'm Levi Michaels. Over here, joining me.
In class, folks.
I am Louis D'Angelo.
Or in the wilderness.
We're in the wilderness. We will be taking care of you from now on here on Poodle Radio. And here you go with Purity Ring. We'll see you next week.